I was thinking about that song as we were just singing that, how vulnerable we are when we say, my life is open wide, my heart is open wide. We're saying I'm a blank canvas. And it's really, it's hard for us to be that trusting, isn't it? Because I know y'all aren't like this, but I'm a control freak. I'm a type A, and I like to be in control of things. And we have to get in points in our life where we stop trying to be in control of everything. And until we become really, really vulnerable with God, we're not entering into that place of trust. As I was singing that song and Madeline was leading us in it, I just had surgery about 2.5 weeks ago, and I had hip replacement. Any of you that have had surgery, you know how vulnerable that is. When they come in and they do anesthesia on you, and they, you're gone. You know, they come in and they'll give you a little shot, and it's like, oh, okay, that ain't really much. But then when they really start putting the juice to you, you're at the mercy of people that you don't know. And that's a natural thing for us because we're so desperate to get whatever's wrong fixed. But typically, I want to ask you, how do you, when you're in that position, how do you typically choose who you're going to be vulnerable to? How do you choose a doctor? By reviews? By word of mouth? By testimony? That's what a review is, isn't it? A testimony of, well, I know somebody and this guy did it for them and they did fantastic and they did amazing and they kept singing his praises over and over and over again. The reason that I let the doctor do my the surgery that did both my hip replacement surgeries, he did one of them 7 years ago and he did this one two and a half weeks ago, is because I trusted another man that said this is who I would use. I trusted a Dr. X. That was his name. That's his name, Dr. Xergenes. It's Dr. X. Everybody knows him, Dr. X. And he's done all of these high-profile athletes and Olympic athletes and all of these. He does knees and shoulders, but he doesn't do hips. And I was like, man, can you do my surgery, Dr. X? Because he had done a couple surgeries on Errol. I said, can you do my surgery? He said, I don't do hips. But he said, I know a guy. He said, I know a guy that will do a fantastic job for you. And based on the recommendation of this individual that I trusted, and the reason I trusted him is because when I'd walk in his office, I'd see all of these pictures of all of these Peekaboo Street and all these other Olympic athletes that he fixed their knees when he worked in Vail, and all these professional athletes. We were in there one day and one of the Braves pitchers walked out. And you know what I said? I said, if he's good enough for these people that are operating at this level, then he's good enough for my daughter. And so that's what caused me to come in and trust his word on who I could trust. And the first time I met Dr. Bradbury, he looked like he was about 20 years old. Young man, he looked young. I'm like, how long have you been out of med school, man? Are you even old enough to be in med school? And he still looks pretty young, but he's 7 years older. But I've had two different occasions just in the last week. I was in New Georgia one day with the grandkids, and we went out and had a a lunch, had a picnic at the playground, and then I went to our favorite little meat store, and I was talking to a guy there, and I had my crutches, and he's like, "Oh, what did you?" And I said, "Oh, I had the hip replacement surgery." He said, "Dr. Bradbury do it?" I said, "Yeah, matter of fact, he did." You know, of course, he had a testimony on it too, that he had done a family member of him and all that stuff. And another somewhere else, and somebody asked me the same thing. He was like, "Oh, did Dr. Bradbury do it?" And I said, "Yeah, he did. You know, he's over at Emory Orthopedic." I said, "Yeah, he did." And so he had a reputation based on testimony. And because of the reputation that he had based on testimony, I decided to let, 7 years ago, I decided to be vulnerable to him and let his anesthesiologist put me to sleep and let him come in and cut and work on the inside of my body. And it's because I talked to people and I saw the results of what he had done in others that were successfully running a race in the physical. And I said, if they can trust him, then I will trust him. And because it worked so well the first time, I trusted him to do it the second time. And the second time when I went, he said, "Well, we're doing things different now." And I'm like, "What do you mean you're doing things different now?" He said, "We're not going to give you general anesthesia." I'm like, "Do what?" He said, "We're going to do a spinal block." And I first, my immediate response was like, "No, I done seen you do that to my two daughters when labor and delivery. And ain't nobody sticking no needle in my spine, because that needle looked big and they were, you know, of course they were, you know, having a baby at the time." He said, "Oh, it's a controlled atmosphere. It's not bad," and all of that stuff. And he said, "We found that your recovery time is quicker," and all of this stuff, and all. And I said, finally, I was like, "All right, man," because I hate needles. I do. I got a thing about needles. You know, you can gash me, you can cut me. I've cut my leg with a power saw, and you know, wrapped a dirty sock around it, and going up to the Lord, "You think I need stitches on this?" And he's like, "Doug, the idiot, let me get you to the hospital." You know, so that stuff don't bother me. But needles, whew, dude, you know, I'll give blood and I'm like turning the other way. Like, "Y'all tell me when you're done, okay?" But because I had trust, I said, "All right, I'll let you do something new. New to me." And I was amazed. I got the shot in the back. It wasn't that bad. Didn't like the pressure, but it wasn't that bad. Then they gave me the good stuff, and next thing I knew, I woke up in recovery. And I didn't, those of you that have had full anesthesia, you know what it does to your body and how your body feels, you know, right for the next day or two and all of that stuff. I mean, Lori came in recovery. They called her and said, "All right, he's done. You can actually come back here now and see him and get back on the premises of the hospital and come see him and all that." She comes back here. I'm sitting up. I'd already ate a ham sandwich. You know, they already getting me up and starting me walking and all of that. And I've just been out of surgery hour and a half, baby. So what he recommended proved to be accurate and successful. But I would have never consented to that if I hadn't had confidence and trust in the one that I was being vulnerable to. And I say that to lead into the lives that we're supposed to live. Last week, if you haven't listened to last week, listen to last week. If you're looking at this podcast or YouTube or whatever in the future, go to October 4th, 2020, and listen to the word. And the word that came out of that was that we were supposed to be navigable points of constant. Navigable points of constant. And where that phrase came from, and I said, I'm not even sure if that's an accurate frame. You know, I used the word constancy some. Randy, I was reading a book this week, and guess what was in the book? Constancy. I said, it is a word. Okay, I can use it with confidence now. Usually I use it anyway, and we'll just make it a word. You say it with confidence, they'll believe you, right, Terry? So last week, God really dropped this phrase in my spirit, and I felt Him breathe on this phrase that we were to be navigable points of constant. And where that phrase came from, I've just finished reading this huge book on Lewis and Clark and the core of discovery. As they were going out and they were trying to find the Northwest Passage, trying to find a river route from the Missouri River to the Pacific Ocean. And one thing that Meriwether Lewis, which was the captain of the Corps of Discovery that went out, one thing that he had to learn to do was not only to navigate according to the celestial, navigate according to the stars, navigate according to the heavenlies, but he also had to take measurements off of those. It's one thing to see it and recognize it and say, that's the Southern Cross. That's the North Star. That is this. That is the planet of, what's the one that, you tricked me on when we were dating and all of that stuff. It's actually a planet and not a star and all of this stuff and everything. Long story, I'll share with you later in private. But it's not enough to recognize these, but to be able to pull measurements off of these. And Meriwether Lewis, so much of his is we had just completed the Louisiana Purchase. And in the Louisiana Purchase that we had bought from Napoleon Bonaparte in France was all of the tributaries that led into the Missouri River. So it wasn't just they bought Louisiana. They basically bought everything west of the Mississippi. And we had contention with Spain for the southwest, and we had to establish our parameters on the north with Canada, which the British control. But the important thing that he was looking for is how much of this land does it reach the 49th parallel? And not only did he have to recognize and say, that's the North Star, and I'll follow that, and I know I'm going north, but he had to be able to use those constants, I say the navigable points of constant, to be able to take measurements and say, this is where I'm at. I'm at the 48th parallel. Or I'm at the 49th. I'm below the 49th parallel. In order to do that, he had to find some unchanging celestial bodies that were out there. Some constants that he knows I can pull off that, a point of navigation. I deem Dr. X that in the professional world. And so I said, if Dr. X trusts this guy, then I'll trust this guy. If he says he's the man, then I'll believe that he's the man. And I'll make myself vulnerable to him. But the only reason that I did that is because of the reputation of Dr. X and my previous experience with Dr. X. All right, stay with me. I'm going somewhere pretty heavy with this morning. Okay? I'm reading another book right now, and not a coincidence, but it just, God lined it up. And they are referencing our changing leadership styles in the church based on Canoeing Up Rivers, the name of it. And basically it's using the foundation of the Lewis and Clark expedition and teaching us how we have to be fluid and change in our leadership styles. And they make a statement in this book, and it so struck a chord with me spiritually that God spun the sermon out of it and marrying it to last week's sermon. And the quote in it is actually the title of a chapter. It says, no one is going to follow you off the map unless they trust you on it. No one is going to follow you off the map unless they trust you on it. I'm going to read some of these notes that I wrote down spinning out of that. No one is going to trust you off the map. No one is going to follow you off the map unless they trust you on it. I believe that the modern church, this is my words, this is not a quote from anybody else, this is what came out of my spirit. I believe that the modern church has done an extremely poor job of modeling a kingdom life to the world. They hear the rhetoric of the institution turned enterprise, which I believe we have turned church from an institution into an enterprise. Both of them are inferior to what it really is. They hear the rhetoric that we have, yet have failed to see the lives of faith-filled followers of Jesus who are bearing supernatural fruit coming from constantly transforming lives. They hear the rhetoric, but they fail to see the fruit of faith-filled believers that are spending their life pursuing Yahweh and being pursued by Yahweh. Bottom line, more often than not, is we look just like them. We may speak a different language because we learned the Christian lingo. But the fruit of our lives looks just like the fruit of their lives. And if the fruit of our life looks just like the fruit of their lives, then why do they want what we got? I put our marriages, our finances, our families, our love, peace, joy, and hope is no different. If they can't see a difference in that which is on the map, then why in the world would they want to follow us on a faith journey that is off the map? We touch and we reach the world in the same manner I chose to let Dr. Bradbury do my hip surgery. Because they look at their life and they say there's something different about them. There's something different that they have that I don't have. They'll see somebody that is successful on the map. They'll see somebody that is flourishing on the map. And they say, if that person that is flourishing on the map, somebody that I can look at as a navigable point of constant, is putting their trust in Yahweh, if they're putting their trust in Yahweh, and I see that they're doing very well on the map, if he's good enough for them, then I should be able to put my trust in that as well. If I walk in and I see John Smoltz walking out of the office, I'm not good enough for me. Be good enough for you, wouldn't it, Randy? Be good enough for me. I see we're into the skiing world and all of that, and I see Peekaboo Street on there. Thanks, Dr. X, you know, and all that. And I see the gold medals around her neck. I see what she's accomplished on the map, okay? And I say if that works for her, then maybe I can come in and put my trust in that. But where we have failed is we have so compartmentalized our lives that we become a people of secular and, I'll use the word, religious. The Lord corrected me this week, early in the week, and then it was awesome. Then the latest message from Damon, Brother Damon, came in, and he was preaching on the exact same thing that Lord had corrected me about 3 or 4 days earlier, and I'm like, cool, that's awesome confirmation, God. I have always said, and I even made this statement just recently to my hunting guide out in Utah. I've always said, man, yeah, I've always been bivocational. And what I mean is I've always hadn't been full-time in the ministry, and I've worked what we call a secular job. So I've worked a secular job, and then I've been a ministry man and all of that. And I've always had the mindset that God is in the middle of everything. And do all things as if you were doing them unto the Lord, and there's really no separating. But yet I would come in my mind, and I'd make these differentiations, and I would separate the two. And I'd say, this is God's, and this is what I do. This is the means to an end. And I've said that many times. This is a means to an end. God's been correcting me on that, James. As recent as Monday or Tuesday of this week, he came in and he said, you're wrong in that, because what you're still doing to a certain degree is you're still compartmentalizing your life. And he said, nothing you do is secular. Nothing you do is secular. I have felt for many years now just as strong an anointing as a businessman as I have felt as a preacher, if you will. I've seen God's hand moving. I felt His presence. I have I've seen His favor just blow me away in the business world and all of that stuff. And I've seen all of that firsthand. But yet I've still come in and I said, this is secular and this is, it's all kingdom, but this is secular and this is religious. And God said, nothing in your life is secular. Nothing in your life is secular. He said, stop coming in and compartmentalizing, because I've really tried hard the last several years not to compartmentalize my life. He says, but you're still doing it. And maybe subconsciously, but you're still doing it. And he said, everything that you do is kingdom. Your business is kingdom. Your farm is kingdom. Your family is kingdom. Your life within your faith community here at Victory Fellowship, obviously that's kingdom, but it's no more kingdom than my life out there. And so God corrected me and he said, quit saying that you're bivocational. Quit saying part of your life is secular and part of your life is spiritual, because it's not. It's all kingdom and it's all spiritual. Tiff, you and Aaliyah have been friends for a long time, and y'all got a nice little core of girlfriends and all of that stuff, and I like it. I think it's cool. Y'all do life together. But you don't do two different lives together, do you? You and Aaliyah don't do church life together and do secular life together. Y'all just do life together, right? Why do we do that with God? What we do is we separate and we come in and we say, this is how I approach these aspects of my life. And then I'll come in and I'll give God, and I'll be real disciplined, and I'll give him a little bit of time every day. Or maybe I just give him 2 hours on Sunday morning, and maybe it's 2 hours on Sunday morning once a month. And I'll give him that, and that's giving God his portion and all that. And he's like, man, I want you to be vulnerable and trusting in everything. Absolutely everything. That's your faith journey. When we come in and we get to the point of vulnerability to where we say, all right, I'm going to let you do something new in me, and I'm going to get in, and I'm going to be so out of it, I don't know what you're going to do to me, but I trust you. I always get cracked up, you know, twice. I've had surgery twice now, and that's all the extent of surgeries in my life. But I get cracked up. They come in, and the one that's assisting the surgeon, they'll come in and they say, all right, which hip are we doing? And I'll say, well, you're doing the right one. You know, last time I really made sure, because they could see the scar on this one, so it'd be hard to screw that up. But they say, I want to say the right one. So you know what they'll do? They'll write their initials on you with a Sharpie. It looks like a Sharpie. I don't know what it is. It might be a clean Sharpie. But they'll write their initials on there. And then the surgeon will come by a little bit later on, and he'll be like, all right, man, you ready for this? I'm like, yeah, Dr. Bradbury, I'm ready to go. He said, which one we doing? I said, we're doing the right one. You know what he'll do? He'll pull it over and he'll write his. So I got these guys' initials on my hip right here. They want to make sure they're working on the right thing. But really what I'm doing is I'm coming in and I'm like, man, I'm giving y'all permission to do whatever y'all want to. I mean, y'all could come in and y'all could replace my knee if you wanted to. You could do whatever, because I'm so out of it, but I trust them. Here's my thing. I trust them based on what? Somebody else's recommendation that I have faith and confidence in. And the reason that I have faith and confidence in them is because I have seen other people that were navigable points of constant in this arena of their life. And it was successful in their life. And because it was successful in their life, is everybody followed, you know, what's that slang out there? Y'all picking up what I'm laying down? Isn't that what it is, Red? I'm old school. I don't know all that stuff. Is everybody getting where I'm going with this? In order for us to be the navigable points of constant, we have to be the one that says, doggone, man, if Randy and Terry Hagan, they have got it going on in life. And if they've got it going on in life, then I want to know what works for them. You say, well, I don't want men to look at me. I want them to look at Jesus, only Jesus and all of this stuff and everything. But you know what the Word says? I'm going to read Isaiah 60, verse 1 to you. This is out of the King James. He says, arise, shine, for thy light is come, and the glory of the Lord is risen upon thee. So he said, your light is shining, and I want you to arise and shine. Your light is come, and the glory of the Lord's risen upon me. So my light is shining, but you know what my light is? It's the glory of the Lord that's risen upon me. So when they're looking at me, you know what they're looking at? They're looking at the glory of the Lord that has come and become who I am. So I'm looking at Paul and I'm looking at Robin, but I'm not looking at Paul and Robin. I don't want to speed life up, but I think it's going to be so cool when y'all have got a testimony of, man, 30 years. Y'all got an amazing testimony now, but it's in its infancy right now. And when that thing comes to maturity, whew, wow. And no doubt in my mind that testimony is going to continue and continue and continue and continue and all that stuff. If Peekaboo Street had not won a gold medal in the Olympics and I'd not seen her on TV racing and all that, it wouldn't mean as much if I put a picture on there. I got cracked up. We kind of developed a personal relationship with Dr. X, and so after Ariel recovered from her surgery, we took some pictures and we framed them and sent them over because he had Peekaboo Street and all these professional athletes on his walls, and we sent some pictures of Ariel over there after her surgery, and she had a big old white-tailed deer she had killed, and she was on homecoming court and she was playing softball, you know, and he put it in one of his rooms. And they're like, okay, I know who this professional baseball player is. I know who this Olympic athlete is. Who's this girl? But see, to the father, she was just as significant. I believe to Dr. X, she was just as significant. The thing that really won me over is he gave me his cell phone number and he said, call me if you need anything. And one day she popped out some scar tissue. She was playing ball on a Sunday afternoon, and we heard a loud pop, and it was scar tissue. And we didn't know it at the time. We thought, man, her knee's gone. You know, and she's out there screaming in pain and all that stuff. So I'm calling Dr. X. I'm like, what do we need to do, man? I thought, what's going on? He said, I'm barbecuing in my backyard with my family. And he took my call. And I'm like, that's pretty doggone cool right there. That he took my call. And he said, this is what it sounds like to me. He said, just bring her to my office Monday, tomorrow. Don't go to the emergency room. Bring her to my office tomorrow. Give her some pain reliever and bring her to me tomorrow. And that really set the hook on me because it was personal with him. She wasn't a nobody. Here's what I want to try to say to you this morning. I'm going to read a couple of verses. I'm going to bundle all this up real nice. Is we think that we are insignificant and we're a nobody. We don't want people to look at our life because we're not a finished product yet. We don't want them to look at our life because we're not a finished product yet. Maybe we're still in the process. We're still in this whirlwind of process. And we say, man, when I become a finished product, then I want people to look at me. And God says, I want your light to shine right now as a model of grace in the midst of this process. See, the great thing about my testimony is not that I could stand here right now, because our life's going great right now. It's not that I can stand here right now and say, "Woo, God's good, God's faithful, God's amazing, everybody follow me." But the strength of our testimony is we can come in when everything wasn't going great, when we were in the middle of betrayal by people, when we're in the middle of the breakdown of relationships, not ours, but breakdown of other relationships, when we're in the middle of financial hardship, when we're going through stuff. All that's relative now, I will say that's all relative. But we're going through all of this, and we can still stand and say, "Man, marriage is awesome. Man, family's awesome. Man, life is awesome. Man, Yahweh is awesome." People's like, "Boy, you sure are upbeat and an eternal optimist." He makes me an eternal optimist. I think a faith-filled person, it's hard for you to be pessimistic. If you're walking in true understanding of beloved identity, it's hard to be pessimistic. It's a contradiction of terms. But we can stand and say, "God is so moving in the middle of this process. God has so spoke to me on this whole thing about the core of discovery and Lewis and Clark and all of this." And I'm going to do some teaching on sowing into something that you'll never see never experience the benefits of. The whole idea of this thing came from Thomas Jefferson. He'd been dreaming about it for 50 years. He was the president of the United States at this time. He was in his 60s. And he wanted to, his father worked with a land company that was the westward expansion. Back then, think about the westward expansion was the Mississippi River. St. Louis was the frontier. It ain't even the center of the U.S., but it was the frontier at that time. But when he became president, he came in and he said, "Now I want to escalate this thing. I want to move this forward. Because we're a young country, we are less than 50 years old. We're a small population, and a fourth of our population are slaves." At that point in 1801, a fourth of the population of the United States was slaves. And he says, "Man, we got to find what's out there." And he knew a young man, Meriwether Lewis, that had to run his family's plantation at an early age because of his death of his father. He had joined the military and ascended to the rank of captain. He had been on the frontier, if you will, the Ohio Valley. He had learned to lead. He'd learned military. He'd learned to deal with Indians. And he earmarked this guy and said, "This guy's going to lead the expedition." He was a friend of the family. The only thing was Lewis was 18 when it first started coming up, and Lewis actually put in for it, and he said, "You're too young." But when it finally began to come together in 1801, he said, "This is the guy. I think he's ready now in the sense that this is who I'm going to use. But you know what I need to do, though? I need to come in, and he needs to go through a process of learning, because there's skills that he has, but there's a lot that he doesn't have yet. And so I want to come in with this process with this young 21-year-old guy." And he spent the next 2 years, he made him his personal secretary, made him his aide-de-camp. He brought him in, and he lived at the president's house. It's what they call the White House, and Monticello. And he taught him botany. He sent him to Philadelphia for him to learn medicine, and he taught him all of these things, and he invested all of this energy and time and resources into him, because he knew that he was going to lead this expedition. But the thing about this expedition is it was not just going to where they had mapped out, which was the Missouri River. They were going off the map. They were writing a new map, drawing a new map, taking new measurements, and learning all of these things that before time was only supposition. And that's the journey God's got us on, guys. God's got us on this journey to flourish on the map, but the flourishing on the map is not so we can sit here and say, "Woo, man, look at my life, I'm flourishing on the map." But it is to equip us to go off the map. is to equip us to lead others off the map. But the message that I really want to lay out for you this morning is that we will never be able to fulfill what God has in store for us to do in leading other people off the map if they can't trust us on the map. I'm going to read a couple verses out of the Passion Translation. One of them is 1 Timothy chapter 4. This is Paul talking to Timothy. And he said, "Instruct and teach the people all that I've taught you. Don't be intimidated by those who are older than you. Simply, listen to this. This is where I want to throw the weight on this. Simply be the example they need to see by being faithful and true in all that you do. Speak the truth and live a life of purity and authentic love as you remain strong in your faith. Simply be the example they need to see by being faithful and true in all that you do. Be the example. Be the example." Do you know that on three different occasions, the Apostle Paul in the New Testament epistles that he wrote, twice in Romans and another one maybe in Thessalonians, but on three different occasions, you know what he called the gospel of Jesus? He said, "My gospel." He said, "Y'all follow my gospel." That wasn't blasphemous. The religious community would be like, "What? That's blasphemous and all that." Because the religious community got really upset with Jesus when he said, "If you've seen the Father, you've seen me. Or if you've seen me, you've seen the Father." They said, "Show us the Father." He said, "If you've seen me, you've seen the Father. Because I am the explicit image of the Father." And I want to encourage you and I want to challenge you to live such a life that you are this navigable point of constant that people can come in and they can navigate their life based on where Randy Hagin is in his life. You say, "Man, I don't want that responsibility." That's God's mandate for us, guys. That's his mandate. Arise and let your light shine. Because the glory of the Lord's going to resonate on you and in you. Isn't that what we do with our children? Isn't that why we live the life we do in front of our children and grandchildren, Cindy? They would follow what we're doing. We say, "Man, I want to be a good example." We tell our kids, "Be a good example, set a good example," and all that stuff. But we compartmentalize it in our life. The Apostle Paul says, "Follow my example." He said, "Tell my gospel." He told Timothy, he said, "Be the example. Don't worry about if they're older than you. You be this point of constant that they can reference their life over or off of." I'm fortunate. I had some amazing kingdom parents. And I could use them as a reference point. I could say that's what marriage is supposed to look like. This is the way a husband treats their wife, because my dad treated my mom like the word says in Ephesians. And my mom treated my dad like the word says in Ephesians. And their work ethic and all of these things, I could see that. And so that was a navigable point of constant in my life. But here's the thing, guys, and I go back to my illustration about my surgery and Dr. X and all of that stuff. The way that the world finds out about God, who He is, what His heart for them, is by and through us. They see the mountains and they see the trees and they see the rivers and they said, "Yeah, there's got to be a divine being." But until we come in and we say, "Yes, and His name's Jesus." And how will they know? "Yes, His name's Yahweh. Yes, His name's Holy Spirit, and He desires to live inside of you. Matter of fact, you're actually His inheritance." And we want to defer that to somebody else. And God said, "It's got to be you." I've sent people over to Dr. X and Dr. Bradbury. because I had great success. Stephanie works with doctors, and she'll send people to those doctors because she's seen them work and perform and be very successful. And she you probably go to her and say, Stephanie, give me a list of who I can go to. And because she's a nurse, based on her experience, you'll trust her word. Based on her credentials. So what are our credentials? Do we have any, Matt? Absolutely we do. What's the fruit of those credentials? That's where I really want to come in on. What's the fruit of those credentials? I'm not talking about failures and mistakes. We've all had them. I'm talking about how do we overcome them and get beyond them. Every one of us in our lives, we could write down a whole list of regrets and failures and screw-ups. And boy, I made a bad decision here. I shouldn't have done this. I shouldn't have done this and done this. But that's the beauty about God's grace and mercy and His love is all of those are redeemed. So say, yeah. Okay, now how do we move on? Let me fix some things. But relationally, that's redeemed. Let's move on in our relationship. It's not broken. Let's move on in this. And so we've got these amazing credentials because of who we are in Christ. Who He is in us. And we've got not just the theoretical, but we've got the experiential that Cindy was talking about. And that is what it is up to us to share with the world. That's those navigable points of constant. Because they see us on the map. They see us on the map. They see us on the map. And if they trust us on the map, you know what they'll do? They'll follow us off the map. Y'all got a mission field every time you go to a bike rally, and I'm not talking about the people that you talk to at the bike rally. I'm talking about the guy y'all carry with you. Of the guys you carry with you. You know what the greatest thing that y'all can be is a navigable point of constant. To where he looks and he says, man, I see how he honors his family and I see how he treats his wife and I see how he treats his kid and I see what his approach to work is. I see what his work ethic is. I see what his approach to life is. And you're crazy if you think the world's not watching. The thing is to be living this navigable point to where when they are watching, they see something different than what they see in themselves. You say, well, I'm no better than them. You know what, dude? You're not, but the presence of God in your life is. The blood of Jesus is. Your sonship is. The Word says when they ask you the reason of your hope, you'll have an answer for them. And one thing I'm finding more and more is I'm finding more and more people that we're around. And if it's for any period of time, I'm finding more and more people saying, man, I see something different about y'all. And every time they do, you know what I do? I have the opportunity to walk through a door that God just opened up. I see it more and more. It's less and less about my preaching and the words that I declare, and it's more and more about my life. I could preach 1,000 sermons, and I have thousands of sermons. I could preach thousands of sermons, but if they can't trust me on the map, why would they follow me off the map? One more verse and I'm done. I'm going to read Hebrews chapter 13. One verse here. Hebrews 13. Let me find it. The Passion Translation messes with me. You know, Psalms and all that's not supposed to be in the back. Hebrews 13 verse 7. This is the writer of Hebrews, most believe was Apostle Paul. He said, don't forget the example of your spiritual leaders who have spoken God's messages to you. Take a close look at how their lives ended and then follow their walk of faith. Another translation would be, or consider the outcome or spiritual fruit of the way they lived. Y'all get that? Consider the outcome or spiritual fruit of the way they lived and then follow their walk of faith. Look at these guys. Look at the constancy in their lives and follow that. Right now, in the middle of an uncertain world, in the middle of pandemic, that we don't know how all of this is going to pan out. We don't know if it's going to resurface next year. We don't know if it's going to get crazy this winter. Every time I think, oh, man, they overshot that, and, you know, we overshot the runway on this, and then we blew that, I hear somebody that's extremely sick because of it or dying because of it, people we know. So we don't know what it looks like. We don't know what our future looks like. We don't know what the elections are going to do in next month. We don't know the direction of our country after that. We don't know what the economy is going to look like. But in the midst of all of this uncertainty, in the midst of, I talked to a lot of people that are, you know, leaders in church and all of that stuff, and they're like, man, church life's just different than it was 10 years ago. There's no commitment level. The people don't see a need, and they just don't come to church. And we've seen that in our own house. And then couple that with the pandemic, and it's really like, wow, boy, it's not like it was even 5 years ago. And I say, I don't know if it'll ever be like it was again. And in the midst of all this uncertainty, there is this driving force in me to be this navigable point of constant. That my faith is more consistent than it's ever been. That my life is not a secular and a spiritual thing. I'm not compartmentalizing anything. Everything in my life is kingdom. I'm re-upping on my commitment levels to everything around me. My commitment levels to this house. My commitment levels to declaring the gospel by preaching the word and teaching and trying to be faithful in that. My commitment levels to her and my commitment levels to my family. My commitment levels to my son-in-law. To them. My commitment levels on every area. I want to be a navigable point of constant. And so should you. I use you guys all the time without your permission, but I do. I'm sure I've got your permission. I say, man, you want to see a kingdom family? You look at the Siegels. You'll see a man that loves his wife? You look at James Siegel. Tammy, I don't know if you know it or not, but that dude is so crazy in love with you. It is like ridiculous. I've worked with him his whole life since he was a teenager. He views you so much as God's gift to him. He so says, man, I married way up. I'm single A and I married big leagues. That's his mindset. And I do that to you guys all the time. And I don't want you guys to feel the pressure of that. I don't want you to be like, man, don't point nobody, Madeline, don't point nobody in my direction. Please, 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 please. God created you as a navigable point of constant. And you know what? If he created you to be that, you'll flourish in that. You'll flourish in that. All you've got to do is look at these things that he's placed around you. And say, okay, There's a reference point. There's a reference point. See, everything, when Lewis was trying to figure out what parallel they're on, if they knew what time it was in Greenwich, England, and then and then where the sun was in relation to that, they could tell where they were. The key was what time was it? I think it was in Greenwich, England. Sounds right in my memory. Isn't that it, Paul? Paul's an aviator. He knows that stuff. The trick was, what time was it there? If I know what time it is, if I know what kingdom time it is, if I know what God's doing in His life, because He's a constant that I can navigate off of, I am more determined than ever in my life to be a point you guys can navigate off of. That you can look and say, that's what Christian business is supposed to look like. That's what good stewardship is supposed to look like. That's what marriage is supposed to look like. That's what family is supposed to look like. That's what generosity is supposed to look like. You know the thing that moved me about Marty and Krista? They're flying back from out west, so happy they got to go out to Jackson Hole and to Yellowstone this week. My understanding, it's the first time I know that Marty's ever been out there, and I'm just thrilled for them that they got to spend a week out there. And we've known them for about 2 years now. And the first thing that attracted us, I actually reached out to Marty. I reached out to Marty. You know why I reached out to Marty? Based on his reputation for his work in Honduras. I said, hey, man, let's do lunch. I want to talk to you about the mission work y'all were doing. He said, awesome, man, let's do lunch. So a few days later, we did lunch. He was actually at a Bethel conference in Redding, California, and I'm like, might be my guy. But the thing that endeared Lori and I to them, really right out the jump, as we talked more about the mission work and the ministry that they did in Honduras, was that they weren't running around trying to raise support and all of that stuff. They just felt this call in their life. So you know what they were doing? They were paying for everything themselves. And we've had that conversation with them sitting in the kitchen in Tegucigalpa. That's why Marty hadn't been going to Jackson Hole, because he's been spending his money going to Honduras. And I was so impressed by that. Been doing it for years. I was so impressed by that navigable point of constant. Of course, we immediately come in and we applaud y'all, and that's awesome, but y'all got to start thinking bigger. Y'all shouldn't have to do this. This is great that y'all were doing that, but let's start looking bigger. And God's been blowing up what God's doing. Because, yeah, if you can pay for yourself to get down there, but you're not going to build ministry buildings, you're not going to do all these things that you want to do in transforming a nation just by that. But you know what that was? That was a navigable point of constant. And I said, I can navigate my life off of something like that. And so God connected us with them. But that was an inconstant that impressed me, Terry. If you can be that selfless and believe in something that much, then maybe there's something that's legitimate right there, and there's something kingdom right there, and there's something God right there, and maybe God's at work in the middle of something right there. And that's what I want every one of y'all's lives to be, guys. Y'all getting this? It's what I want y'all's lives to be. It's what I want y'all's lives to be. It's what I want your family to look like, your marriage to look like, your business to look like that. Lose a get-by mentality. Lose a hireling mentality. A hireling comes in and he works for wages. start approach your business world, whatever that is, from a kingdom standpoint. You know what God will do? God will give you ideas, and God will give you inventions, and God will open up opportunities, and you'll see God's favor. You have to marry it with hard work. See, a lot of the problem here. Let me finish with this right here. Here's the problem. And I shared this with a guy in Utah 2-3 weeks ago. It's in Isaiah 61 or Isaiah 62. Actually, he comes in and God promises us. He said, "I will marry myself to your land." And when he says he'll marry yourself to your land, that means I'm going to come in and I want to marry myself to everything that's going on in your world, to your kingdom. And I don't mean that in a negative way. The world that you live in, that should be ever expanding like the universe, by the way. But he says, I want to come in and I want to marry myself to that world. I want to marry myself to your marriage, Rhett. I want to marry myself to your children. I want to marry myself to your grandchildren that are not even in a womb yet, but to your grandchildren. I want to marry myself to KST. I want to marry myself to Abiding Farms. I want to marry myself to everything about your world. But God spoke to me and God clarified something to me. He said, I cannot do this until you marry yourself to your world. And that's pretty much everything that I'm talking about today. Is you have to come in and you have to marry yourself to your world. You have to marry yourself to your land. And when I got that understanding, I didn't have the verbiage for it until within the last year. But I got that principle several years ago, about 8 years ago, when I turned 50. And when I stopped viewing my life as, well, I settled for West Georgia, you know, West Mayberry. I don't know why in the world God stuck me in Mayberry, but he did, and I went and started marrying myself to it. I have such a love for this. Married myself to Victory Fellowship and to you people. And I love worshiping at other events. I love powerful, anointed worship leaders. I've listened to Stephanie Gretz sing a wear out King of My Heart time and time again. Make me want to do backflips. Declaring stuff over LA and all of this stuff. But you know what I've married myself to? Doing life with Madeline Siegel and her leading King of My Heart. I married myself to here. You know what that's done? That's established me in a place of extreme. I'm established and settled. I think I spoke that word out on the lawn. I'm established and settled. You remember that word. You hear that day, weren't you? Established and settled because I've married myself to that. I married myself to her, not just in 1983 when I said I do, but I married myself to her every day when I get up and I say, I still choose you. And that is what keeps me from having an eye on the door of what possibly might walk in that's 15 years younger than her. Because I'm happy and content and married, being married to the most beautiful woman in the world. The thing that makes it, yes, she's physically beautiful, but the thing that makes her beautiful is our history together. That's what makes her stunning to me. And you guys will never walk in the fullness of everything we've talked about this morning until you begin, and a lot of you probably are, but you will never walk in that until you marry yourself to your world. And when you marry yourself to the world, then it gives him permission to come in and marry himself to you. Before I had my surgery 2 weeks ago, I had to come in and sign all these forms and all these consent forms. And it says, I understand that this is dangerous. I understand I could die. I understand this could happen and this complication and all of that. And I consent and I agree to give Dr. Bradbury and the anesthesiologist and all, I give him permission to stick a needle in my back, understanding that there could be some junk that could happen because of that. I give them permission to do all of this. And until you come in and you consent to the Lord, and say, God, I give you permission to make me a navigable point of constant. And until you do that, you cannot become that. But when you do that, watch your world blow up in a good way. Because then your family will look at you and say, man, I want what they got. I want what she's got. Then your coworkers will look and they'll say, I want what she's got. There's something different about her. I don't get it. I don't get it. There's something different. I don't know what it is. And they'll ask. And they'll watch. And then all of a sudden, you become something they can navigate their life off of. You say, man, I'm not there. Give him permission. Give him permission. Give him permission to make you a navigable point of constant. And others will come to know the Lord because of that testimony. The greatest testimony I have is not what I say when I've got this microphone in my hand. The greatest testimony that I have is when you see me in a private setting where there's not people around and I'm loving my wife and I'm honoring my wife and I'm blessing my wife and she's blessing me. That's the testimony. That's the testimony. All right, let's stand to our feet. I'm done, guys. She is too. She said, Poppy has been preaching too long today. Ashley said she's been praying for me. She said, we got to pray for Poppy. Pastor Poppy. I'm all right with being Pastor Poppy. I got a video from came through Aaliyah from a parent of a kid that visits here some. You know what she was doing? She was being Miss Aaliyah teaching children's church and Pastor Poppy telling Miss Aaliyah to pray, and Miss Aaliyah was praying, and Miss Aaliyah was praying a powerful prayer. And you know what we are to that young child? A navigable point of constant. That she can look at that and she says, I can navigate my life off of that. I can navigate my life off of that. I think the greatest accolade that could ever be given to us is when somebody says, I can navigate my life off of that. Because they show me to the way to a loving Father. They show me the way to not only not the courtroom, but to the living room, to the bedroom, to the kitchen of a loving Father. That's what we're aiming for, Paul. That's what we're aiming for. Is I can navigate my life off of him. Tyler can look at you and say, I can navigate my life off of that guy. Stephen Rice can look at you and say, I can navigate my life off of that guy. I can navigate my life off of that guy. So I pray you guys walk in an amazing week this week. We're not going to call the worship team up and do altar call and all that. You can have your altar call where you're standing. You can have it in your car on your way home. You can have it in your backyard this afternoon on the road as you drive. I'm going to have a wonderful worship experience the next few hours. I'm going to be driving through the cotton fields of South Georgia. And you know what it's going to scream to me as I drive through those beautiful white cotton fields? It's going to scream to me, an alive God, an alive Creator that makes all things beautiful and fruitful and productive. So I pray you guys have that week, this week. I pray that you choose to be a constant that somebody can navigate their life off of. The enemy will say, you can't be that guy. But everything in Yahweh says, yes, you are. He didn't say, Ken. He said, yes, you are. Yes, you are. Yes, you are. Your children adore you, and they navigate their life off of you. Your children adore you, Brett, and they navigate their life off of you. I pray that carries them to the expected end. Amen. Off the map. Off the map. Let's be good on it so that we can lead off of it. Father, I just declare your blessings over everybody that's here today. I pray your blessings on those that are traveling home from fall break. I pray for blessings on those that could not come for whatever reason, Father. But maybe they'll listen to this podcast or live stream or whatever medium, and it may be 5 years from now. I pray your blessings. If they're listening to this in 2025, I pray that we are living such a life, Father, that all of us, not just the few chosen clergy, but all of us are living such a life that the world can look and they can navigate their life off of us. They can navigate their life over the things that we're walking in and standing in and believing in and having hope and faith and trust and confidence in our relationship with you, Father. Our union with you. They can navigate their life off of that. And I pray those blessings over everybody in this house, over everybody that listens to this. That he who has an ear to hear, let them hear. And I pray this would resonate in this entire body. Let us be that people, Father. And we love you and we thank you and we praise your name today, Father. In Jesus' name we ask these things. And it's in his name we place all of our hope. Amen and amen. You guys have an amazing week. We'll see y'all next Sunday. Remember, the security team is going to show us some stuff. And so if you can, just hang around and get educated on that. And remember, the trailer treat's coming up at the end of the month. So we love y'all. Bless y'all. See y'all later.